We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy your stay. Outside the sun is shining, it seems like heaven ain't far away. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day.
I'm all right. Happy.
So we've all already done an introduction part a couple of times, but so that everyone gets reintroduced to your voice, we'll still do a round the table. So I'm Keith, I'm the co-host of We Talk Comics.
I'm Ryan Ferrier.
I'm Rick Overwater.
I am Nick Johnson.
I'm Chris Peterson. Sorry, my...
Oh, so gross?
No, my tooth is sensitive and I just like bit right as I was... Sorry.
You're right, Kate. Very long.
The camera got it all.
I'm Kate Larkin.
I'm wishing I was at a different table with these guys.
All the support tonight on 60 Minutes.
Do you ever use Sensodyne?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I'm old.
I have veneers, so
I'm 40 years old.
Hurty teeth, I like to say, I believe is the scientific term.
Almost. Like 6 months. I had a tooth fall out while I was in Vancouver.
Like it just filling. Fell out?
Yeah, like at the Vancouver Comic Con.
Really?
So I got fillings and got all stuff. And now my teeth are hurty.
Right, they're hurty teeth. You got hurty
comic
teeth,
creators so. Can't afford dental care.
I just don't practice, like, brushing your teeth's played out, man. Like, let's be real.
It is.
This is the worst group.
Brushing your teeth is so played out.
You're lucky you picked us last.
I'm joking, by the way.
I'm feeling good. I'm glad I got this group and they're really punchy.
I do brush
They'd rather
teeth.
Talk about dental hygiene than comics.
FTR, for the record, is what that means.
I know what that means.
There was a Garth Ennis comic. It's Marvel Knights one-shot, where the entire issue is told through a guy's mouth.
What?
Every panel is inside this guy's mouth, and it's like the guy's gone in for dental surgery, and there's a Punisher story happening in front
Dude.
Of him. In the story.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It's really cool.
I think I've seen that.
That's pretty neat.
Maybe comics aren't all bad. Maybe things are going to
well,
turn out.
I've got that Marvel Unlimited app. If you can help me figure out what it is, I'll look for it.
I want to say Double Shot was the name of it. It was Marvel Knights. Like, Double was in the name. Yeah. I think it was Double Shot. It was like two short stories in one issue.
Double Trouble.
Seen through a guy's mouth. Trouble.
Seen through a guy's mouth. All right, well, you've talked about all the... Hey, so no one has healthcare in comics.
I've got Blue Cross.
Oh, nice. That's responsible of you.
Ditto.
I don't.
Because
you have a
I
child,
have a daughter.
Though. Yeah.
So I kind of have to make sure something's looked after.
I just have duct tape. Whatever falls off.
Yeah.
Descendant of Red Green over there.
Ryan has a backup passport in a different name if anything goes really
wrong. It's Sergey.
it's
do your accent. Do your accent. You'll definitely pass.
At this point, I don't know who the real one is. I don't know if I made up Ryan.
You're in too deep.
All I do know is I can kill him if I want.
He's got a go bag.
Watch the light drain out of his eyes.
Five places. Well, the upside of being forced to have a day job is you have benefits.
Yeah.
That is a good thing.
Yeah.
Mine just kicked in. That's exciting.
Really apologize for our group.
You didn't even ask the question yet. You letting the ship just kind of meander.
I have a go bag. I opened it up and there's a third go bag inside of it. with my ID in it.
You opened up the fourth go bag and there was a go bot. And you were like, what? That's where my go bots went. They were in my go bag.
I have a bottle of body press from 40 feet
and
of
then
shit.
There's yeah, got this GoPro and there's some go-gurt inside.
What the fuck's in my bot bag then?
In your what?
What's in my bot bag if that's wrong with my go bot?
Bot flies.
Ew. Don't even mention.
Horse butts. Flies.
So you're all in the... you're all in the social media sphere. You've got work that's available at various levels. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the immediate fame fortune? This is a question just for Chris. How do you deal with the immediacy of feedback from your audience? I mean, it used to be 3 months before you would hear an answer, but you would know what someone thought of your issue.
I mostly keep waiting for it to happen.
Ditto.
Yeah. Well, I actually, when we crank something out, we get some hits and some stuff comes up a little bit. That's a good question for these guys that actually, I think, have stuff that's anticipated. You know, people are looking for it. Yeah, because... You don't. When you're a small indie, you don't get much negative stuff because you're just not out there. It's mostly people that are looking for you, looking for the weird shit. There's people that want that. There are not very many of them, but there's people that are actually looking for that. And this hasn't been much to deal with. You know, when you're indie like me, you're talking about you put an issue out, and you've got 20 Facebook comments, 10 tweets in a month, and then you basically fade out again until your next issue, right?
You know? You ever thought of doing it online?
We put the whole comic online?
Well, because, again, you say because of the audience. Mm-hmm. If your audience is, because it's a very more niche of a type of an audience, right?
A lot of those Google keywords would be banned.
No, I don't know. I find stuff.
I don't read it at work in print, let alone.
But what I mean is, like, you might find more of that audience on a world scale coming to look at it.
I think that's exactly right. And it gets back to my earlier comment. One of the other hosts, you know, asked, and at the end of the day, if I've got an hour and a half that night, do I want to write a letter or do something that I enjoy? Or do I want to work on the business? Do I want to make a platform? And I've just been too lazy, you know. And if it was all I did and my bread and butter was on it, I'd probably do the business. And that's exactly what we should do. And I did pitch that at first. We're like, well, maybe we should go web it. We just went, well, then we're doing a bunch of computer shit. We're not actually writing and drawing a comic. And we just decided because we actually have day jobs at this point, you're stuck, right? So you're making all the wrong moves to get you out of your day job. On the other hand, because I have a day job, I don't actually have to sell them, you know? And it's like, I want to make a comic. And then when I got some time left over, then I'll work on marketing. But that's exactly what I should do. And it should be serialized. And it should be on the web. You know, and then it would be easy to promote. If I just did that work.
You've got three issues to put on the web.
Yeah, and I think that's what will happen.
I think Rick has more issues than that.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
don't leave them all for Ryan. Get in there and get some. You know?
Nick, you were doing Wolf Hands as a digital to start, right?
Yep, you bet.
And what was the pace that it was going up?
We kind of did a season deal where we would release the entire story arc over 13 weeks, one page a week, and then take a break, and then the second season was the exact same one. So, yeah, the cool thing about releasing it like that is every week when you update, you blast it all out on social media, and then next week it's all on social media again. So for 13 weeks straight, it's just constant. A lot of people just see it, but they don't read the comic until like 13 weeks is up because they want to see the whole thing in one go. But it's good for promotion and it keeps you in people's subconscious.
Ryan, you've got like Sons of Anarchy and stuff like that, where there's probably people anticipating more of that. Did you find eruption of?
No, I think Sons in particular was a very niche thing, and not a lot of people talked about it, at least on like Twitter.
Just bikers.
Just
fucking
yeah.
Love that comic.
Yeah, so
they're all on Instagram. So.
yeah. But what else was the question?
Just how, and you have an immediate response, immediate feedback of
it's terrible. I hate it. It's anytime the day a book comes out, it's like I get really super bad anxiety. I have that already. Like just believe it or not, I have really bad social anxiety. Like I'm comfortable here, but I just don't like it.
It's a hard space if you.
And I'm not
strangers talking about something you're passionate about.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not. I'm not super into social media. Like I'm on Twitter a lot, and I'm really comfortable with Twitter.
Yeah, you're good at Twitter. I'm like, damn, that's good. Yeah.
So like Twitter, I'm fine with, but I don't use Facebook. I use Tumblr, sorta, and that's pretty much it. And I find I'm a very private person. Very, very private person. So even though the books I'm putting out, that's like Dave had a lot of stuff about my life in it, but it's still, you know, a comic book. So it's nothing about me, but at the same time, it's like you're still putting a piece in. It's very personal work. So I get very anxious. I get very, very nervous. And,
I wouldn't get that from your Twitter stuff, man. You're like a Twitter pro.
Well, I mean, Twitter feels like a safety blanket for me just because you can tell funny fart jokes. And then promote your work. So there's a disconnect. It's I think Twitter's unlike Facebook. Facebook's like, hey, here's my personal shit. No, I don't do that. But yeah, that's how I deal with it. But at the same time, I'm also a little bit obsessive about it. It's terrible. You shouldn't read your own reviews and you shouldn't search vanity search, but I do. Like, I want to see what people are talking about when, you know, if they announce something or when a new Dave comes out. I kind of want to see that. And for the most part, it's been all right, but then you get the odd time where you get a really bad review or people talking in the smack. And it's,
I always refer to, when you do just the general Twitter search,
yeah,
for a word or a phrase, I refer to that as drinking from the fire hose.
Yeah.
You're getting everything. Even people you've blocked will show up on that
totally.
Do that general search.
Like when Curb Stomp came out and I was searching, it was just all Seth Rollins, who's a wrestler. It was all like his, because that was his finishing move, was like Curb Stomp. So just like, I couldn't even see anything, just scrolling, and it was just Curb Stomp or American History X. But now I search Dave sometimes, because people say funny stuff. Like someone called Dave a DILF, and I was like, but there's this one dude on Twitter who's, his username is like Dave D4VE, and he's the douchiest dude on the earth. And so I'm like not even following him, but every time I search Dave, I'm like, oh, this guy sucks. And I just fall into this like wormhole of just like hating him.
So listening to this podcast.
Yeah, it's, I hope so.
Fuck you, D4B.
Douche. But I think social media and the immediacy of seeing what kind of stuff people are saying about your work is good and bad.
What's your experience been, Chris?
Heartbreaking.
God, downers. Downers.
because I have a different type of anxiety where I don't show it on Twitter though. I mainly just like, I'm usually like funny stuff on Twitter, but in real life I'm like just a basket case of stuff.
Anytime you read like a funny book for me, I'm like, that's my lowest part. Sorry, Chris.
And then I always worry when like if I say something like more related to like an actual comic of mine, I'll get like no response to it, and that usually does happen. So I'm like, people don't really like my comic stuff. People just like it when I'm randomly funny about something funny, like whatever, right? But when I say something about a comic, it like goes nowhere, and I'm like,
it's an interesting feedback mechanism because of, I mean, what feeds you on Twitter is those the likes and the retweets and the responses. That's feeds that dopamine thing. And when you put something out there, you're like I think this is the coolest thing I'm working on. Like, you know, in your case, like, here's a great panel that I did, and like, it's crickets. Like, it's a weird disconnect of like, I mean, the other part wasn't that authentic to begin with. So
you also skewed the whole system a little bit too, in that you're asking a room full of people whose natural predisposition is to go into a room by themselves, right, with a computer, and spend like 5 hours by themselves, and that's what they would prefer to do, right? You know, how do you feel about going out into the world and exposing yourself, as it were?
Dude, I don't leave my house for a week.
Social, yeah, right. You know, so I'm a little bit more that way because I'm a musician. So I'm a little more, probably a little more of a, hey, everyone, look at me than these guys. But at the end of the day, that all started from being the guy that preferred to go in a room by himself and like make something. So how do we all feel about having to go out and like engage the world in a way that is transparent and immediate? So I've had to do it for a living, so my skin has got pretty thick compared to these guys.
I had to psych myself out to come here today, man.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah.
But we're like,
I hate going out. The best thing in the world is when someone cancels the plans. Right?
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah.
You're like, hey, don't worry about it. It's all good.
That's the first line of a book right there. That's good. I'll say this on a good note, though. When stuff does happen, it's really great and overwhelming. Like, it's like I had a time when, just a month ago, when I had no money for anything.
That's a good story. Are you going to tell that story?
I'll tell it, I guess. Well, you know, I'm telling it. Anyways, I had no money, no nothing for, and I haven't worked for a few months, and I just got desperate, and I just said on Twitter, like, look, if anyone, like, because I would always hint at it for like 3 months. I was just hinting at it randomly, like, haha, I really do need a job, though. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't want to be that guy that's just like down about everything. So I was always up for like the first 3 months of me not doing anything, just, you know, keeping positive and keeping going. And then finally, I was just like, look, I literally have no money. Does anyone have like a job? And then it just got like, you know, like 600 retweets over a period of 2 days.
Yeah.
And then just tons of people like, you know, responding to it. So it turned into like a big thing.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to happen.
So when the chips were down, social media and the peeps were there.
Yeah, it just helped. Like, I mean, it did help that certain people retweeted it at certain times, you know? Like, I mean, I was only maybe expecting, like, hoping, like, all I was really hoping for was, like, one editor, one writer would see it and go, like, oh, okay, cool. Hey, you want to do a job? And I thought maybe, like, 10 retweets and 2 faves or whatever would happen, right? But then, like, it just exploded from all, like, you know, one person retweeted that had, like, you know, a certain amount of followers, and just, like, it just went around. It went literally, like, around the globe, because it would go, 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 go. And then, like, all of a sudden people in the UK were waking up, and all of a sudden it started retweeting again, and then it carried on the next day, and just, like, and then, you know, some good things came out of it.
So that's the plus side of putting yourself out there.
There's a lot of, I mean, there's definitely a lot of
downside.
I think we talked about the downside.
Here's another one, though.
I think there's a lot of capacity for the positive, though.
If you're talk first, think later kind of guy, which I think I've fairly established that I am by this point. So I hosted a panel on comic script writing, which it's a good thing you had to duck out of that.
Yeah, sorry.
It turns out it was supposed to be a thing where I had, like, I was going to have this for Words Word Squad, a big writer conference, and the guest writer was Daniel Abram, who's one half of James S. A. Corey, the Expanse series, you know, sci-fi show, huge, right? He's also the guy that adapted all the Game of Thrones books for graphic novels, right?
Oh, wow.
I was supposed to, like, here's what scripts look like, here's how you can write a script, because I always go to the You Want to Make Comics panels at comic conventions, and they're shit. Everyone's in 5 minutes talking about how it works at Marvel, right?
Yeah.
And no one walks out with anything that they can use, right? Well, it turned out to be one of those panels, and they put Daniel Abram on, and didn't tell me all this stuff. Like, so here I am hanging out with dude who's like reading, you know, writing a bunch of novels that are like great selling novels that I'm reading right now and stuff like that. And slowly through Twitter, through just accidentally saying things and all that, I've slowly, I think, alienated this guy that I sat beside, who's like this wonderful contact. I don't think he hates my guts, but I think he now, when he sees my tweets, he's like, yeah, that guy, he's this guy in Calgary. I'm pretty sure, yeah, and who knows? We all have some self-loathing, right? I don't know, but I feel like I took this contact and just, you know, and I didn't say anything crazy, and I'm not so stupid as the chain, you know. People try to buddy up to you too tight on Twitter, whoa, dude, jump in the middle of your conversation.
Blowing up my DMs.
Yeah, you know, maybe, you know, I did a lot of the first, you know, but I figured out pretty quick, right?
Yeah,
you know,
you get your hotline blinging.
Twitter etiquette, yeah.
Well, I'm pretty careful with the DMs, so, you know, yeah, I don't want to. That's pretty passive.
The worst is when,
anyways. Yeah, so yeah, I think I kind of slowly took this great contact that I probably could have solidified and stuff like that. You know, I had my corner, and I've slowly become one of those guys that guys like him just kind of have to deal with and be nice about their job.
What has he actually, like, what feedback mechanism have you had that's the case?
I don't know, just human intuition, you know.
No, I mean, has he unfollowed you? Has he, like, or is it like that he's never favorited one of your things?
He's casually correct. Oh, yeah, I can live without that. I don't know. If you don't get validation, that could feel weird. But sometimes it just means that they're scrolling their Twitter feed on the crapper and they move on and they didn't have time to click like, right? You know, you can't always take that personally. But sometimes when they're kind of just quietly, gently correcting you on something or whatever, you're just like,
See, I can be on the other side, and I've actually made a rule for myself that the third time I feel the urge to do that, I just unfollow the person.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because clearly, there's a disconnect between us. I would rather not be the jerk that's like.
I've also developed the rule, if I wonder if I should say it, that means I shouldn't. But usually I've like hit send as that thing triggers in.
If so. if
I was at that panel, I saw the start of that.
Yeah, with the comic panel, it went really good. But other than I pitched it as that we're going to teach people, I got there, and it just turned into this. Here's how we do it, you know, when we're doing Game of Thrones, blah blah. And like nobody got anything useful out of it. They got like interesting stuff out of it, but no one's going to walk out of that and make their first comic. Sorry,
no, not at all. If more like Game of Thrones, right? No, but
hashtag.
But if I think before you tweet, man, that's for sure. Because like all the jobs, I bet most of the jobs I've gotten, like at some point, if you trace it all back, it came from being on Twitter. Just from I've gotten direct work from Twitter. I've also gotten to know people who give me work from Twitter. So I mean, it's for me, it's been invaluable. But yeah, I also learned early on. I used to be very tweet before you think, and that can really affect your career big time. I've seen firsthand. I've seen people not get big jobs because of their attitude or stuff they've done on Twitter. I've been in that position where I've seen that, but I've also been lucky to have people that have kind of corrected me early on. They were like, well, maybe think about, you know, I'm not saying don't speak up. No, like, absolutely don't silence yourself when it comes to important things. But in terms of, like, just think before you tweet. You
but
know,
if, it's,
what kinda,
if it's important.
If, I mean, right. No,
I mean,
if it's
there
important.
Are, I mean, certainly on Twitter, there's a feeling, there's an inclination, there's a pressure that you're supposed to comment on everything.
Right.
And, you know, if you don't give a crap about it, you don't have to have an opinion.
No, exactly. Exactly. And I think it's, you know, a lot of editors, if they're looking for people that they want to give work to, they'll probably check your Twitter and see what kind of person you are. I think if you saw the tweets that I wrote up that didn't publish, they'd probably sterilize me. But
I do that. I think what helps is just like typing it out and you get it out of you.
Yeah, yeah. And then you think at it, you read it, and you say like, how is it, this is probably offensive, and or you know, whatever. But
don't write it on anything that has the send button attached to it.
That's one out of ten. And like, is this cum joke going to be too much?
But, I don't know. Ask the pineapple.
Yes, I would rewrite a cum joke like 12 times before I actually hit send.
Funny story. I'm writing a comic right now that has a cum joke, and I had to ask the editor. I was like, can I put cum jokes in this book? And then they got mad because they're like, now I have to go ask the other department about it. It's like, thanks, Ryan.
See, that's why they hired
my job is good. Yeah.
Well, when it comes to social media, when it comes to social media, I mean, I've done a lot of research on marketing, but most of the marketing research I've done has been mostly directed towards fiction authors. So when it comes to marketing for comics, whether it's being a writer or an artist, you definitely need to have your own separation between your personal communications and your professional communications. That doesn't mean that professional communications have to be really, really dry and really, really bland, but they do have to be the think before you do it. It has to be more streamlined, where you have certain interests that you are more likely to put on that strain of social media, so that between your readers and your professional contacts, they all get a similar view of who you are, what you do, and what you are trying to communicate with your creative work.
Yeah.
Right? So making sure that you have that distilled vision of yourself that is professional and presentable. Yes, you can be confrontational. There are a lot of people who do that. You can definitely speak up about the hard issues.
Yeah.
But making sure that you do understand that there is a separation between the professional one and the personal one, because a lot of times people will put a lot of their personal stuff and a lot of personal investment into their professional social media presence, and that can be really, really dangerous, especially if you're prone to having mental health issues, because you start to base a lot of your self-worth on, you know, how much feedback you get, how much recognition you get. And it definitely helps to approach your professional social media with the distance of saying, okay, I'm going to do this with the intention of communicating, you know, these top five passions and this type of humor and
right.
this personality and these types of contexts that I'm going to work with. That's something that you can really focus on to make that work better for you, but also for your own sense of well-being.
Mm. I've got the right filters, though. You can put some personal stuff in there. And I like the guys that do, like, Saladin and Ahmed. I don't think I've got his name right.
Mm.
Or Kurt Busiek, you know, great comic writer, right?
Right?
I want, you know, he's selective. He'll talk about titles he's working on. He'll talk about issues a little bit. But once in a while, you know, it's a photo of him and his daughter at the airport or something like that. Hey, we're on our way to whatever. I like seeing a little bit of that, too, right? And so I try to follow those guys' model. And once in a while, here's a witty anecdote, you know, my kid that just broke something or whatever. You just got to make sure it's
well. That's not saying
not polarizing,
that
right?
Professional social media, it shouldn't be entirely devoid
right.
of your personality and of your life story, right? It's choosing the things that you are willing to share within a larger public circle.
Yeah, and criteria and filters like, a little bit of knowing when this is too personal.
Exactly.
Sure. And I think it all
and knowing
depends
who
on
your audience is going to be, because if it's something personal and you're going to go bitch about something that maybe you're not as informed about as you
it's all
would
about
like
kinda,
to pretend you are,
frequent,
you know, you definitely want to focus on a social media that has a smaller circle that is your more your personal standby, not
your
professional platform.
Like, you know, I'm surrounded by fantasy writers, right? And there's like three things that all great fantasy novels have to have that are happening to me. The three things I hate the most about fantasy, right? And none of that goes into Twitter. As much as like, oh, Jesus, another one of these. God, I'm so sick of these. I just...
We had a, there was a panel that Brett hosted, the Renegade panel at the Expo this year. Jim Zub and talked about his online presence, and he said, if you only read that, you would think I was a ridiculously positive guy. I don't like stuff. I have stuff
right.
I don't enjoy that I hate. But I have friends to talk about that stuff with.
Yeah,
that's not the that's not the avenue for me to talk about
for sure.
A comic I hated or a guy I don't or an artist I don't like.
Yeah, that's kind of I took that like a couple years ago. I had to snap and wake up and be like, all right, I don't want this to be like just a slew of negativity. Like, I'm actually a really negative person. I'm not happy at all. I hate my life. But like, that's not something that I want to put out. You know what I mean? Like, that's because that's the I follow people.
Other
like
than
that
the podcast.
Otherwise, yeah. Otherwise, then I just unfollow them. Like, it's touching on what Kate said. It's you don't want to have just someone goes to your Twitter page or your whatever page and it's just like, here's promotion, because then that's just like, oh, you don't. There's nothing in there. There's
oh, that's
to
awful.
It. That's awful.
Yeah. It should definitely be like 20 to 1.
Oh, sure, yeah. Could, because it's
it should be like 80 to 1, usually.
What I'm working on, you know, what we have to remember is that we are a brand at the same time. Like, because people in the comics, the people that will buy our comics, they ultimately, we want them to follow us. We want them to follow Rick or Chris and follow me, like, because that's... We'll get them over to new books that we have. So it's got to have your personality there. So I mean, like, I put a lot of weird shit on my Twitter, but that's kind of what I'm. That's what I'm about.
You
know?
Put the good parts of your personality on, right? You know, like, just, you get value from being entertained, right?
Right.
You got to provide value, you know.
Yeah.
And like, he does that. So I don't know. Is he at home with loading the shotgun? I don't know, but the tweet he just put out was pretty funny, and so I'm going to be watching for the next Ryan Ferrier tweet. And so whatever is wrong with the guy, there's a good part there that you get that, right?
Sitting in the bathtub crying.
That's exactly it.
Tweeting a funny joke.
But as a record reviewer, I learned this, right? And this is why all local musicians don't hate me, and they hate Josiah Hughes, who wrote for Fast for a long time, is you only got so much space. You can tell somebody about something that's shit, or you can tell somebody about something that's good, right? You know, and quite often if it's something that's crap, unless it's like something with a huge mega marketing machine behind it, they're not even going to know it exists. So you take that minute to tell them about something that they might want to, you know, there might be a funny quote or just You know, okay, so I just saw the new Fantastic Four. So now I'm a little late, so I'm not going to tweet about it. Even on time, I probably wouldn't bother saying a lot about it, right? You know, I'll take my time to tell you about something that you ought to check out.
Right.
And it's just kind of having that filter.
Yeah. But, there's a dead giveaway for me. If you, like, go through all of my tweets, there's a dead giveaway for when I don't like a movie.
You know,
send me a tweet that says, I'm about to go to this, and then you can never mention it.
Yeah. That's awesome. But that's kind of creator courtesy, right?
Dr. Noobs, right? Did I say that?
That's kind of creator courtesy, where...
Yeah, you're shitting on someone's passion, right?
You know? Yeah, you know, you should only share things on social media if there is if it is a positive interaction, and if there is potential for crossover by mentioning it.
Yeah.
Right?
So I wrote record reviews of some small indie band put out a piece of shit. I just wouldn't review it. If the new Kid Rock album was a piece of shit, I would take the time to tell you about it, because you probably need to know about it, because right now they're spending a bazillion dollars telling you how awesome it is. You might need to hear that dissenting voice, right? But at all times, no matter how shitty it is, some guy is probably a guy that you would have a beer with and totally get along with, poured himself into that thing, right? You know,
that's our rule. When we do, a couple times a year, we do a small press clean out, because we get sent tons of review copies, and we don't have any kind of regularity to the book. But about every 6 months,
regular?
We will. Yeah, we need more hard copies, more fiber.
Okay, so I was going to
the. Yeah. But we have a rule, like, and when we go through this, okay, here's the 10 things we read. If no one in the group liked it, we're not going to talk about the book. We just skip it.
That reminds me, there was a podcast. Sorry, Nick. It was a podcast, like, when Dave 2 number 1 came out, and I listened to it because I'm super vain. Because they're like, today we review Dave. I'm like, oh yeah, headphones, listen to it. And the dude was like, I got 3 pages in and I couldn't finish it. This book is terrible. And like, I got so mad.
Wow, yeah, that's a dick.
I got so mad, and I almost confronted him about it.
Whoa,
I did.
I think that's a no-no. I don't think.
Yeah, never do that.
Creators
so.
Should.
I did have someone confront me about a review,
but that really? was baloney. Which review was it?
I won't say it.
Yeah, okay.
I'll say it after we're recording.
Tell me this douchebag.
Well, it was Chris and I had done a review, and yes, I did tag the creator, but I had given it a positive review and Chris had given it a negative review. But in it, I said one thing that was like, it's not perfect because, and the guy came back to me.
That was the catalyst.
It was.
Really?
It was an interesting. Yeah.
Nothing's perfect.
And that could be, you know, a fault of the reviewer just not, you know, handling it right. But also, quite often, if you're a new artist, right, you have to learn, like, look, you're gonna put stuff out there.
Yeah,
and
I definitely
going
said
to get a percentage
fault, yeah.
of people, you know, that are just going to shit on it. It doesn't matter if you get out to enough people.
And here's the thing, too, is that of like. Anyone can be a critic. Anyone can start a blog and be a journalist. 90%, if not more, of the people who are reviewing comics online, and correct me if I'm the only one who thinks this way, don't know what they're talking about.
No, you're 100% correct.
Yeah. And actually, it was Scott Kowalczyk. I had a great talk with him, and he was telling me about, like, because I got really bummed out. I got a bad review. And he was just like, they don't know what you put into it. They don't know what they're talking about.
They don't know
how to critique a comic book. You do.
They have no patience for that.
No, thank you.
We've also had,
and it's funny, I gave up reviewing.
Well,
there you go. I got out of music reviewing. So my last job, I had a full-time job at the Calgary Sun. I'd worked my ass off for 10 years in the city to get to the point where I could have benefits and a full-time gig, going to concerts and being around what I love. The only thing I love as much as music is the sort of stuff working on that, right? And I just, after a while, couldn't be counted among those numbers anymore. Because I just felt like critics, like, you need industry experience and a whole bunch of certification to judge a dog show. To appraise a house, you've got to have a bunch of certificates and like that. Any fucking schmuck with a crate full of comic books or a crate full of records can be a critic, right? And some of them will rise above and be good, but a lot of them just aren't.
40 years ago, you needed a master's degree to review movies.
You know, right, now anyone can. And I love the internet and social media when it came out, because I thought it was going to democratize information. I work in communications, and I'm a little passionate about mass communications. It shows up in my fiction and stuff like that. But at the same time, I hated to be one of those native guys that says it's dumbing us down, but it is.
I don't think it's dumbing us down, but it's certain. But
well, more shit is floating to the surface.
But it's just the sheer volume of it. It's, I mean, there's no Siskel and Ebert anymore because
This goes full circle to what Ryan said.
There's like there's 80 like accredited critics on Rotten Tomatoes, so the opinion's meaningless.
They should kill them. Kill them all.
I agree with that.
Murder them.
Well, I mean, we had a review, and
and they said something very, you know, specific about the story, and I just wanted to say, like, there's reasons why that happened.
Yeah.
But they saw it as just like, you guys are just dumb, or you guys are just lazy.
It's just paint by numbers, right?
And I'm like, but there's a reason why we had to do that, because of either time constraints, or because we only had 4 issues, or because we only had like this or that type of thing.
Yeah.
But they don't see that part. They just go like, why didn't they just write this better?
Yeah.
And like, well, we only had
a certain.
You get that music a lot. You can't tell. People can't tell. This is something that was made for $50. Like, we put out a $250 EP in my band, right? And it got shit on. And then we got good reviews of our next stuff. Biggest difference, you know, I listen to the comments. Biggest difference boiled down to the amount of money we put into it, right? You know, production. There's a big difference in, you know, how much money and time you put into a project that is separate from the talent, you know.
Is there room for
all,
like,
these constraints?
You have a last thought, Nick? We're going to wrap up this section.
Oh, sure. I was wondering if there's room for good criticism.
Yeah.
Have you ever listened to a review of your comic that was a negative review, but they were like, here's what I don't think is working,
there is.
Here's why.
Yeah.
And you're like,
I've actually,
oh, shit, that's a
and I've
point.
Actually changed.
Really?
Yeah, and that was,
that's
see,
that's awesome.
I'm not against reviews at all. I used to be a film critic.
Yeah. Why do you put yourself through them?
I love great conversation and great discussion and dissection. I love it.
Yeah,
so when I read a great review, I love it. It's awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah,
that's great.
I've taken, like, people talking about my backgrounds being not as detailed, so I start adding more detail. But then when they keep on talking about it, I'm like, okay, that's enough. There's a certain level of, like, I'm doing the best I can.
But it's tough to swallow, but I kind of get why you do it, right? It's because, you know, if you can, like, keep from putting a gun in your mouth and read it all, you might actually get something out of it that's useful to you. You know, because whether they think or not, you do want to be better. You do, like, if I knew that you would hate this thing and like this other thing, I'd have done that other thing, you know, like, possibly, right? So you ingest that stuff, you know, because occasionally you're going to glean some carrot out of it.
Yeah.
And that's why I do it. It's like, you know, they say you shouldn't read your own press. Well, it depends who you are. If you can thicken your skin enough, then ingest a little bit, because you're making this for people, right? You know,
it also depends on your feedback about whether or not those are the people that you have intended to reach and that you have wanted to reach.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking to appeal to a lot of different people, then you're just going to be watering down the vision of your work.
Yeah.
Right? Because what you want to find is those people who connect with it perfectly and really resonate with it, and they can't stop talking about it, and they love it. Those are the people that you want to be reaching, right? So if there is criticism out there of your work, generally that just means that they might not have been the best fit.
Yeah, and taking a second to figure out who they are does help, because we've had some people go, but the people that love our shit turn out to be the people that grew up on heavy metal, that read Fantagraphics, which, you know, when I hear people talk about comics, I never hear them talking about, like, Fantagraphics or Charles Burns or any of the guys that I think are really doing it, right? You know, I'm kind of interested in what's happening over at Marvel, but nah, this is, you know.
That's comics.
And someone's like, I can't get into the character. Like, some people are talking about, we pitched to somebody, we could repackage this, would your company put it out? He goes, I can't get invested in this character. Well, we were terribly, heavily influenced by Mad Magazine, Don Martin stuff, right?
Yeah.
Who's invested in the Don Martin characters, right? Right? Who's invested in those characters? You're reading for what happens. You're reading for the plot, the jokes and stuff like that, right? So it gets back to what you're saying. You know, you kind of got to know who you're going for. And if that's a small audience, and it's easy to forget that, right?
It is something that we did when we were doing some I think it was when we were reviewing, like, I think it was when we were on Comicosity, we were reviewing like a whole line launch, like 10 titles or something. And we removed having a negative review, and we had a category called Not For Me. Which,
that's good.
Yeah, it was entirely based on the idea that I may not be the target audience of.
Right.
And, you know, I have that with the new Supergirl show. Like, I actually do enjoy it, which is surprising to me, but I was perfectly prepared to it just not to appeal to me.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, shut my mouth about it if it didn't. We're going to wrap up. I'm going to leave you with one bit of advice that is my new Twitter motto. Be the tweets that you want to see in the world.
Twitter Gandhi.
Twitter. I'm going to Rick Overwater rules tweets. Handle.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Chris from We Talk Podcasts.
Hey, Chris.
I know most of you. Kate, was it? Sorry.
Yes.
horrible with names.
Hi, Kate. I'm Rick.
Why don't we just go around the table and introduce ourselves? Then I'll throw out a topic, or somebody can throw out a topic, and we can just chat about comics. Let's go from my right. Ryan, who are you, and what do you do?
I'm Ryan Ferrier, and I'm a writer and sometimes letterer. I do the comic books called Dave and Dave 2 and Curb Stomp and Sons of Anarchy. I think I'm missing something.
I'm missing Supernova.
It's Ultranova with Chris Peterson.
You didn't say it right.
I did a Marvel story and a Bravest Warrior story. That's kind of what
Sons
I'm
Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy, yeah.
Sorry, I like the show for some reason.
That's what I'm hanging my head on, so yeah.
Alright.
My name is Rick Overwater. I too am a local wretched writer. I kind of divide myself between regular prose fiction and comics. I've just published a couple short stories this year. One in an all-Alberta crime fiction book called AB Negative, a weird western story in an anthology I co-edited called Tales of the Weird West. And I also do a weirdo space comic with Nathan Miller and Cam Hayden called Futility. That's me in a nutshell.
Did you say a cowboy?
What part of his sentence?
Sorry.
There was Western in there.
Yeah, Western. I write a lot of weird Western stuff.
I love that. He tuned out and you're a cowboy and he came back. Yeah.
Nick, who the hell are you?
I am Nick Johnson.
That's all we need.
That's it? Oh, man. Thanks, Rick.
No, I'm pretty sure you've done something.
I've done stuff.
I've seen you at a table somewhere and gone.
I was just filling the seat for somebody who had gone to the bathroom.
Okay.
Thanks again for that, by the
way. You're welcome, Ryan. Anytime. Are you good now? I guess most recently I did art on Wolf Hands. More recently I'm writing and drawing a graphic novel I've been working on for a while. Doing some anthology stuff, working at an animation studio during the day, which is a new development, which is really cool. That is it. That's all. I'm done. You're up, cowboy.
Do I say my name? Chris Peterson.
Yes.
And I do, I did Mayday and Broken World and
Supernova.
Supernova.
Ultranova, your jokes. You worked on it.
The comic is still for sale. You know, it's
still yeah, I've got 10,000 copies in my garage.
Wow, they make that in print?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got them.
There's evidence. and the Grindhouse books from Dark Horse. Not all of them, but a couple stories, B. Vixens from Mars and Blood Lagoon. And some other random things here and there. Just other couple random pulp, Ultranova, Go-Getters, I can't, you know.
Go-Getters from Monkey Brain, right?
Yeah.
I worked on it too.
And Nick worked on that as well. And then right now, I'm just figuring out projects. I'm doing storyboarding on the side. Well, not on the side. It's my sort of main thing right now at the moment until some other projects sort of coalesce. Is that a right word?
Yeah, that's a beautiful word. Yeah, maybe you should be the right
word. So we'll see how that goes in 2016. So there you go.
I'm Kate Larking. I'm a writer, mostly. I currently write on the comic Crash and Burn, which is a webcomic that we're independently publishing. The artist for the comic is Finn LeCullen. And other than that, for my own writing, I do speculative fiction, queer fiction, and nonfiction marketing writing.
I'm looking it up right now.
CBcomic.com. CB-comic.
Did I understand correctly that you also have, kind of like me, a day gig where you do corporate-y stuff? Did I hear that right?
Part of your writing? I'm a book buyer, professionally.
Oh, I feel bad for you.
Is that the best
job? You just met a guy that wants to sell books.
Go through a lot of catalogs all day long. Yep.
All right. One of the things I was surprised to learn when I started interviewing you guys and meeting more comic book people, in my adolescent fantasies, I always thought comic book writers were these rich millionaires.
Oh God!
I'm wondering now. I know a little bit more. What is success? How do you guys define success in comics? What is your goal? What are your goals?
I'm probably not in the right headspace to answer this, but I'm going to do it anyways.
Yeah.
Just because times be tough right now.
But
it's different for every person, for like what you want personally for success. For me, I just want to pay my bills and be able to consistently work and put stuff out, which is crazy that that's the hardest thing to do, is just to keep afloat. Like, you know, it's an industry where the creators are kind of paid last, and so just to get the work is the hard part, you know? That's what I want to do.
Anyone else want to weigh in?
I'm with Ryan. I'm a writer by trade, and I consider myself pretty grateful that I actually get to pay bills, and I own a house now. My wife has a job that has a lot to do with it, and all that stuff. Like, I'd be a writer, but I don't get to write just comics. I don't get to write just fiction, which is what I want to do, which is what I set out to do. I don't even get to do just music journalism, which is what I used to do and used to pay the bills when I was younger. I do corporate stuff now, but I consider success being able to do what you want to do, get your bills paid. For me, it's a hybrid. It's skewed a little towards stuff that I don't want to write for people that I don't really want to work for. But at the end of the day, I still consider it some degree of success. But a success as a comic writer for me would be, or a fiction writer, would be to actually do that all the time and be able to satisfy my financial obligations. You know, and I think that's most people. You know, I just want to get paid enough to not have to do something they don't want to do.
Yeah.
You know? And therein lies the rub.
I don't need the image 90s money where they're all driving Lamborghinis and stuff. And new Levi's jeans and stuff like that.
You want the world
I don't need new Levi's jeans.
You want to be left the hell alone by the world so you can make comics and have food in the fridge and not get evicted.
Yeah.
And have the power on and maybe once in a while go someplace other than Calgary.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful dream.
Yeah, I know.
I'd work for that. I recently kind of had to reassess success. Like, be like, what does it really mean to me? Because I got a day job that I can draw all day, and I'm really stoked about that. It's a similar thing, like you get to do your trade. And I was like, all right, I did it, I'm here. And it's like, oh man, I still have the same feelings I did before. I still have up days, I still have down days. And I'm like, okay, so what does this mean? Like, whatever I'm working on now, it's less about, is this going to get me somewhere? Is this going to get me something? Am I going to like pitch until I'm 80 years old and I keel over? Or in my spare time that I spend away from my friends and family, am I going to work on stuff that really makes me feel good, like stories that I really have to tell? So I have a day job that I like, so now on my off hours, instead of like, you know, pitching till the sun goes down, I'm going to make stories that I love. And that's the new focus, because it makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's the new one.
Success to me is something a bit more, but I mean a bit more to me, just because I don't feel I'm there yet. And it's more along the lines of not having to worry necessarily about struggles and in general.
Yeah.
Like being able to just like concentrate on life and doing your work, as opposed to like, oh my God, I got this done like before, you know, Friday, so I can get sent in a, you know, invoice and get paid on the, you know, 30 days from there, and, you know, that sort of type of stuff. So success, that's the first part of success, is just like not worrying about that sort of thing. Just being able to do your work and you know, looking ahead. Instead of like right now, looking ahead and being able to decide things, you know, 6 months down the road. And another part of that is being able to, in this business, being able to be recognized. Not with awards and stuff like that, but just being able to say like, hey, I have this cool idea and I want to do it. And are you guys going to come along with me on this adventure, right? So that's the other part of the success. instead of struggling, instead of just like, you know, finding the perfect wording for the pitch and the perfect, like, you know, like getting the right character design and the right this and the right that, and, you know, handshaking the right people and all sort of things that, like, again, you know, not having to worry about that, right? Just being able to say, like, you know, being whoever, like, you know, pick a name like Greg Capullo or whatever, or Frank Miller, so, you know, not that high. Like, I don't need, I'm not looking at that, but I'm just saying, being able to say that. And being able to just go, like, I got a new idea, and I want you guys to hopefully support it. And, you know, and you just go out the gates with it type of thing. Yeah. So that's the success I see. And it doesn't have to be a movie, it doesn't have to be a TV show, but it has to be, I just want to be a part of doing something.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, sorry to interrupt you, Chris, but it's that, like, kind of shows you how at this point in time the comics industry is kind of, the system's kind of messed up, because it's like, none of that's unreasonable. Like, you should very well have that success right now. Like, you shouldn't have to be worrying about not getting work and paying bills and stuff like that. So I'm sure that's a whole other subject. I'm steering away from it. But kind of makes you think about the system, the industry as it is for creators.
I come from a bit of a different side, so for comics, I'm still very much at the beginning. I entered a project this year as a writer that I did not see coming. It wasn't a path that I had intended to be taking. I had planned mostly to do fiction writing. So coming into a comic was unexpected, and a lot of the ideas that I have for success and for marketing come from traditional book publishing and self-publishing books, mostly novels and nonfiction. So for me, I know that for me to be healthy is the best success, and that comes with a lot of things where there's checks and balances involved. So for success, the best thing I can have is something that I enjoy working on. I don't know if I will ever be at the point where I'm wholly reliant on it for my income, but making sure that I enjoy working on it, I'm passionate about it, I have people who enjoy consuming the media that I'm creating, I think that's the most important definition of success. But unfortunately, that, you know, comes from backing away from the financial side, not expecting to fully and totally have that income to support me and my family.
I am sorry, you all got the question wrong. The answer is work for Marvel.
So, well, the question that I would ask then, is there any point where you would say, you know, success just as I hope for it isn't going to come, so I'm just going to pack my tent up and, you know,
oh yeah,
go just start taking dishes.
Just for the recording, we've now been joined by Brett Monroe, who wasn't in the panel, if you're slightly confused.
Well, I think what you're hearing here is people that are willing, we're all willing, and we've all had to kind of adjust the parameters of success, what success is. But somebody could do it. I'm pretty sure if you had Fred Manlanti sitting around here, three guys that haven't done anything but draw for Marvel for 2 years and all kinds of stuff, you get a slightly different answer. Maybe not a wholly different answer, you know, but to some degree, if you're not to the point where your people are calling you for work and you're turning away work, which you can get to that point, you know, I think, you know, people have to adjust their parameters for success a little bit. I mean, that may never go away, you know. You know, if you know, Ryan was turning away work, you know, sorry, I got four titles going right now and I can't do this. Thanks for the offer. You know, you probably still have to occasionally stop back and think, what do I want to do and how do I want to be doing it? But it would be nice to be turning away maybe a little more work.
Nice problem to have, yeah.
You're finding, I think, people here at this level, we're all the level of game where you have to kind of redefine success a little bit and make some realistic decisions. If you feel bad about it, you can always turn on the news for, like, you know, half hour, you know, and think about how shitty your life is then, you know.
Well, I think we've altered the definition of success because we love what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? So there isn't going to be a point where we pack up and walk away from it. You know, we all are in this for varying degrees, but a lot of it is self-fulfillment.
Yeah. No one's going to quit it. It's how much do you get to do at the end of the day, right? You know, I finally got to the point where I'm making enough as a writer when I go home at the end of the day. I used to have to go home at the end of my day job and then write for Fast Forward and, you know, which is a defunct music magazine, and write for Exclaim and Snowboard Canada, whoever hired me to top up the money. And I now can go home, and if I whatever I got left at the end of the day is all me. And even though I've been writing all damn day, writing like stuff for engineers or whatever, when I suddenly start writing about somebody that explodes for a living or whatever, you know, I the energy comes back up and you can get a few more hours out of the tank that way, you know. And he hit on something really important, I thought, which is that you also got to think about how much work it is too. You know, you talk about you put it together and you got to put to the pitch and all this business stuff and all that. When you're doing that on the side, you're not creating. You know, and for me, it was a bit of a tough year. I had to define what I want to do. I got about five stories in my head I got to tell. Two or three of them I think can only be told graphic novel. And those have backburnered because I just don't have the time and energy to go and either beg one of these guys to do a couple pages where I've got no money for them, they need to get paid, or to pay a couple guys that I don't know who are worth the money and go pitch it. Or I could take the other idea, which is a short story, and sit down and open Microsoft Word and write it for free, you know. And so it's been a good year for me that way, but it's come at the expense of some of my comic dreams a little bit, which aren't dead. But there's been some adjustment, for sure, in 2015 on my priorities as an artist, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many factors that are out of the creator's control. Like, publishers aren't putting out as many books, or they're not greenlighting books, you know. Sales are insanely low, you know, and that affects all the books you do after that. So there's just a lot of, it's a weird time. A lot
you
of
brought
things.
This thing down right from the get-go.
Yeah, I didn't mean to. Yeah. I am buying more books than I ever have. So I always assume, because I buy digitally, and when you buy digitally, you don't get the old comic book store feel of like who's coming in and how's the business doing. I don't really care. I only care that you do a good book.
Yeah. Well, that's what I care about too. Until my bills stack up and they're like, oh, here's your sales numbers for this quarter, and it's like, wow. I remember, and I don't mean to be a downer at all, but I remember when my first when Curb Stomp came out, I remember I hadn't paid attention to sales numbers. I hadn't paid attention to sales numbers since like X-Force number one back in the 90s. Yeah. So I was like, this thing sold like a million copies or like hundreds of thousands of copies. I thought that's what comic books were selling. And then I asked my editor, I was like, well, what's the number on Curb Stomp number one and on the pre-orders? And they were like, oh, it was like close to a little under 10,000 or 10,000, something like that. And I was like, all the blood left me. And I was like, oh my God, this is horrible. This is like, they're going to cancel it and like, they're going to dig up all like the Atari game and they're going to bury them. What game was that? You know, and then bury all of it. This is the worst selling book in the history. But then I looked it up and it was actually pretty good. And I'm like, I can't believe that that's the industry. It's insane. Yeah,
really.
That's like 7,000 is a great. That's a good number.
Yeah,
like,
so if you can keep 7,000, you're doing good.
That's crazy to me.
But most stuff, you know, like it drops off at 3,000.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So for perspective, the town of Olds all bought your comic.
They love comics up in Olds.
Be the mayor.
Crazy about it.
Yeah.
It was actually, I just bought all of them. I felt bad for Ryan.
Yeah.
And now I'm burying them in a stage.
Yeah.
And they'll be huge about the time all your rights expire and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Now, wouldn't an obvious move, something like Curb Stomp, if you're only selling 7,000 comics, which we've already established is good,
mm-hmm.
why is it necessary to give that chunk of money to a publisher? Is there actually an advantage to having a publisher in this day and age?
Need visual space on those shelves. The difference between releasing a comic by yourself or even through just like a very small indie publisher compared to putting like an image eye on it, you gain numbers just on that. You'll gain like 5,000 sales just because of that, right? And it sounds weird because basically image is basically just a printing company, like, you know, is a basically.
Oh, I've read some terrible image books.
But you have to be invited to the party, right?
Yeah.
But, And you could have the same book and have the same people like it, but people just like, they go through their previews and they see, okay, here's the Image books, here's Dark Horse books, here's these books, this is what I'm buying. Mm-hmm. I don't know who this other publisher is, and this is not a down to any other publisher.
Like, so, you know, like, so really that Image Eye boils down to an endorsement of sorts.
It's yes. Branding. Yeah. It's a brand, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it, right? So that's an important part. The other part is, and this works for music too, because you're a musician like me, and a lot of what I learned about putting out anything creative comes out from like writing songs, recording CDs, trying to support them. And the model's not that different.
It's very similar.
There's nothing a publisher or record label does for you these days that you can't do yourself, but it's time-consuming pain in the ass. If you're a creator, and I used to be in an indie band that was pretty popular and did really good in Western Canada, and I'd sometimes make more in my spare time than I was making at my job, and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, it started to get crazier scheduling. I'm scheduling interviews, and I'm handling production stuff, with, you know, and I'm not actually creating. I got to the point where I was not actually making much music. And so I'm careful that when I make stuff now, all that stuff is time consuming, distributing, marketing, and all that. And through sheer force of human will, you can actually make as much of an impact as some smaller comic imprints will do. But all the time you're doing that, you're not working on your next script. You're not drawing your next comic, you know. And at the end of the day, did you get into it because you're a businessman? Or did you get into it because you're a creator? And so it's nice to have someone lip that crap off of you.
Yeah, right? It's not sustainable.
And user experience so that you can do what you want to do and the thing you do best, which is create, right? Sometimes you're just forced. Like, to get this thing out, I got to set aside a chunk of my day and make phone calls and do emails, right? And get a cover and hire a layout guy to build me an ad or, you know, whatever it is, right? You know, and but so if you can get a publisher to do all that stuff for you, you know, and not rip you off, that's is gravy, you know? It's cool.
I think one caveat to the indie publishing is if you can get a successful webcomic going, like a comic on the web, you'll gain a totally different audience than what goes into a comic store. And you can then, and if you latch onto something very phenomenal that people like, you'll then have your own.
Yeah.
You see Kickstarters that just go crazy because they have a huge online following. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with comics in the mainstream world. Because that's where you'll see the one indie area that really can take off if you make a successful thing like webcomic online. Like, you know, there's Nimona is one of the bigger ones.
Blind Ferret. They've got mad money.
Yeah, like
crazy
like,
mad whack money.
Space mullet.
Lamborghini.
Yeah, they got Image Levi's jeans money. But that you see a lot of that kind of audience touches in like video games a little bit too. They seem to be more hand in hand.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I've seen webcomic people at a convention, and they'll just have like fans coming up to them like just crazy.
Yeah.
But they don't read Marvel. They don't read DC. They don't read, you know, Image Comics. They don't even like go to. They probably barely even go to comic stores. Nothing, you know, maybe like I'm not gonna judge any type of audience, but they have that following of that character or that story or that writer. They just love everything that person makes, and they make a following that way. But you won't create that in the comic store. You got to create it outside. Whether you're making a video game, whether you're making anything else, you create that audience who then buys your media in some other sort of fashion. Like, you know, if Joe, who makes this great webcomic, has an audience of 100,000 people, you know, going to his comic every week, and he made a video game, like, out of nowhere, he was, I'm going to make a video game of my character. Boom. Like, he'd probably get, like, instant success of a Kickstarter.
I would play Wolfhands the video game, by the way.
I would, too. Does anybody want to make that?
Kate, what do you think? Because we're talking directly about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, do you see differences in fans or your audience? Or
I'm still really early in the process, so I don't know as much about the traditional comic book fans and comic book marketing. I mean, we haven't been able to do any print issues yet. We've only been able to do digital issues, and that was a trial where we're doing, you know, everything ourselves. So learning EPUB formatting, trying to figure out CBZ dead formatting, everything like that. I definitely come from it from a different side, where a lot of writers will do essentially a lot of work to make sure that their books are successful. I think a lot of people in who were part of traditional publishing before, who are now in self-publishing, they have a lot of lessons that they've gone through and have learned that can be applicable to comics now. And I think a lot of comic book creators are slowly moving over and figuring that out. But the problem is with web comics, you have to overcome the free consumption and how to translate it into paid consumption. So we're lucky that we have a lot of really obsessive fans, but we have to grow from there, and it's an uphill battle to have something offered for free and then all trying to convert it into anything paid.
Do you
your brand name already? You know, I'm thinking of one of my favorite comics. I haven't read the last issue of it yet. I mean, it's Private Eye. I'm not a digital guy, but Private Eye made me go and get it. And it was a pay what you can, which you can do when your name's Brian Caveon, because already 10,000 people are going to click just to check it out, right? You know, and I paid 99 cents an issue for the first couple of issues, which is pretty cheap for a comic, right? On the other hand, what's his production costs for that, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm in for the long haul. And I started paying $3 an issue. And then my comic book reader crapped out, so I'll buy the whole compendium. I'll pay what it's worth again. So lucky for him, shitty iPad technology. But monetizing, if you can get that first wave of people to come, you know, that's an easy.
Wait, did you just say the first Dave of people?
Wave.
Wave. Okay.
He's dropping right.
Dropping right. Damn. If you can get Dave numbers,
Do you do Patreon?
I'd love to have Dave numbers.
We are one of our goals.
I'd love to have Dave numbers.
One of our goals coming up in the new year is to set up Patreon. What we're doing right now is we're on a lot of the digital vendors. So we're on Smashwords and Kobo. We have Kindle and Comixology coming up.
Nice.
But we're also on Gumroad, which is a pay what you want. So there is a minimum, and then there is the option to pay more. So we do have a lot of fans who utilize Gumroad.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so there actually is quite a few comics on there already, and that was exciting to learn that there was a way that we could allow our fans to do that, because they want to see the comic grow more than what it is right now and possibly increase in production.
That's really cool.
All right, I'm getting the signal from Brett that we should sort of wrap this up. So just if anyone listening wants to go immediately and pick up their stuff. I don't know. We're not sure how we're putting these out yet or anything like that. So why don't we go around the table one more time and hawk your shit.
When's the podcast airing?
It depends on how many of these we get.
Oh, okay. You can find my stuff in comic stores. You can find the Dave trade. Dave 1.
To give you a little bit, just to give you a little bit more, it'll be at least 2 weeks.
Okay.
If you can...
Curb Stomp Volume 1 and Sons of Anarchy Volume 4, which is my first arc, will be in trade in early January at local comic stores. And I believe the Dave 2 Volume 1 trade will be in March.
Futility is 100% indie. You can get some of our issues in some Calgary shops, depending on what they're sold out of or not. Best way is to come looking for it and look up Futility, the comic, on Facebook, or look for Futility on Twitter, and just send a message out, and we will mail order to you. We mail order. You can also mail order through my site, which is overwater.ca. So my name is Rick Overwater. Overwater.ca. There's a Futility page. You can direct mail order it from us. One of these days I'll get off my butt and get it on Comixology.
No,
goes
you
back
won't.
To that. Do I want
yeah, you won't. They don't let that kind of filth on the internet.
Yeah.
No. There's way too many disgusting penises in that book to go on the internet.
There's a niche market for
issue
that.
Issue 4 is going to be 90% reduced in penises, and issue 5 will be 100% penis free.
Oh.
Based on,
I'm out.
Well, yeah, that's great.
I'm out.
Just an accident of scripting.
I'm
going
to have
else,
to. You mean I have to get Cam to draw extra penises in my
well,
book?
Well, that's the thing, is some of them in there are in the script, and some they're just in there. So the script number 5 at this point that has none in it, but I can't say anything about the
Cam,
art.
Cam will find a way.
Yes, that's exactly it.
It's that's just a shame, man.
This is a high penis issue. Here you got
more dicks. That's all.
Yeah.
My work is online. You can see my illustration and comic stuff through my. Blog, which is nicksoup.com. You can check out
Wolf
my
Hands.
Portfolio. Yeah, nickj.ca. And Wolf Hands is available online for free through wolfhandscomic.ca because we release it online for free first before we publish it. So, yeah, you can read it all there and all its goodness.
Is it in on Comixology?
No. I think before we put it into Comixology.
Well, I don't know why I'm looking for a way to pay for it. Well, I've paid for the physical issues. I've read the free... Why do I want to pay Comixology? But seemingly, I do. I don't know.
Comixology takes huge cuts.
Do it?
You'll never make a penny off Comixology unless
no.
you're selling huge numbers.
No.
So sell huge numbers.
Because they have a threshold
sell
of...
Sell huge numbers. I've never thought of that.
Sell huge numbers. Yeah. Their threshold is $200 bucks, right?
Really?
So you don't make... That's they don't issue checks until your profit's over 200. And like at the cut that you get, which is what? 30 cents? 40 cents an issue? 50
less.
Cents?
Less.
Yeah.
That inspires
because
me to get
it's,
off my butt and do
you
work.
Get 50%
yeah.
what you get after the online retailer
right.
takes them. So if
yeah.
Kindle is taking, you know, 70%
yeah.
of the royalties for anything priced under $2.99,
yeah.
And they only take 30% from everything priced over that, you know, you're looking at 15 cents
right.
for a 99 cent issue.
So what good, about Gumroad?
Gumroad is
Gumroad,
pretty much all of it except for the percentage.
Pretty much all of it and a transaction fee of
yeah.
25 cents.
Oh, when
like
I finally
that.
Get off my butt, I think I know I'll probably call first.
That's where we sold pulp on that one. On
really?
Gumroad, until we got it on Comixology, we sold it on Gumroad.
I mostly just want something I can send a link to.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
the only reason.
Go here,
that's
right?
why I put it on Comixology. I knew I wasn't going to get big money. Just try and get readers, try and build your
yeah.
own.
Yeah,
that's
if you want someone to see it, here it is.
Yeah.
You know.
Success.
Chris, where can we get your stuff? All Comixology, right?
The you can get them pretty much everything on Comixology. I don't think Mayday is, but it might be. I'm not sure.
I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
I can't remember now.
That's the book you're doing with Kurt Pierce, right?
Yeah.
It's on Comixology.
And Broken World, I think it is. But anyways, the trades will be coming out both next year for Mayday and Broken World. I'm not sure exactly what time period. Somewhere between January and July for both of those. As far as the Grindhouse books, they're already in trade in stores for both of those. It'd be kind of cool to get a trade of just the stories I did, like because they're both related, they're both the same characters in them. It'd be cool to have a trade of that, but I don't know if Dark Horse would.
Yeah, that's a little weird because that's volumes 1 and 3, isn't it?
Yeah, volume 1 of the first one, and then volume 3 or whatever
yeah.
they did for the next series. So it is split up in different trades, but it would be cool if it was put
like
together.
The Peterson edition omnibus.
Yeah,
absolute Peterson,
double sized.
Yeah, art sized.
and
get through the door.
And I forgot to say this also. I do a web comic called Coming of Age. Coming of Age. I don't write it. I draw it, and it's what we could. It's like a not really a furry comic, but it's animal comic. It's animals, but we don't really want to call it a furry comic because it's not really a furry comic. But anyways. It's a true, basically true life event stories, life telling of the writer, Maya, who she's just writing events that happen in her life, a certain time period in her life about a certain stuff that happened. So I'm drawing it.
All right, and
where? You guys are ridiculously long-winded. Just saying.
I got a lot of things I got to say. What can I say? Ridiculously out of that sentence.
It's true. I could have also removed tone from it as well. Yes. You can read Crash and Burn at cb-comic.com.
Boom.
Boom. All right, we're going to find a way to mix you guys all up. In the meantime, let's go have some... do eat. Mo brought tons of crap that I don't want to haul home.
So we got Ryan Ferrier here, Rick Overwater, Nick Johnson, Chris Peterson, and Kate, I'm sorry.
Larking.
Thank you. I should have actually known that. So what were you guys talking? You guys were with Chris Beck before, right?
You betcha.
Yeah.
All right. What were you guys talking about with him?
It's heavy stuff.
Depressing shit.
Yeah. Let's talk about entertainment.
The futility of doing the thing that we most love to do.
How to lose money most effectively.
How we gauge success. Comic industry stuff. Yeah.
We were talking about over there largely about working with or without an editor. And kind of having your, especially for, if you've worked with an editor, you haven't, if you're self-publishing, if you need one. Rick, you guys are self-publishing. You got you and an artist and a colorist, right? You guys don't have anybody. You're the editor, essentially, aren't you, right?
Yeah, and I have some experience editing. Unfortunately, it's not comic book editing, which is a unique thing unto itself.
But, yeah.
Gets me partway there.
Do you want an editor? Because one of the things that's interesting is when I look at this room, there's people in here now that you're meeting that now can be a resource to help you create that you probably didn't have 2-3 years ago.
That's why I'm here, buddy.
That's why you're here. Just all about you, right, Nick?
It's always good to have an editor, and it will always make you better if it's the right editor. And that is the thing right there, right? It's got to be somebody that gets what you're doing. Or is just so good at their job that if you put your hands in their vision, you walk out of the product going, yes, I never would have done this on my own, and it's better for listening to this guy. Finding that person, he or she, is a thing unto itself, right? I don't know a lot about, like, Ryan no more. I haven't worked with any comic editors. I'm a word editor. I'm a line editor. You know, so my prose is good.
Yeah.
But art is art, and writing is writing, and the thing of them together is a whole beast unto itself.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a middle ground in there that I don't totally get. I'd love to have somebody that'd have to work for free, right? You know, and that's the thing. We do it all ourselves because we can afford to live on what we're getting paid, which is nothing.
Yeah. I think... part of people sometimes confuse the differences between what an editor actually does or what their role.
Yeah.
Like some people just think of editors as like making sure that things are spelled correctly and like that everyone that the person has their hair parted on one side in all the panels type of thing, right?
Yeah.
And then other people like there's other editors that are really like they know how to be hands-on without being like hands-on and micromanaging your stuff, but like there's ones that like guide you or question you, like why would you do this? Why would you do that? Like to see where the story is going, stuff like that.
Would this character actually do that?
Yeah, there's different editors.
There's different types of editors.
Yeah, and
different skill sets among editors.
Yeah, and there's
but also different types.
Yeah,
because there's substantive editors who look at the overall story. There's copy editors who look down on the micro level to make sure everything's correct. You can pretty much have people edit for character, edit for plot.
Yeah. I'll go by what we do in comics, and I think probably Ryan's the most familiar with it as well. Is depending on the company and depending on their project. They sort of want to either guide it or they want to like let you sort of do what you want, but just make sure this or that happens correctly type of thing. And then some are just like there to make sure the project goes okay, to keep on your toes, like just to keep you scheduled and stuff like that.
Hey,
like
timelines.
Yeah. And then usually that's how, like, you know, the assistant editor will, you know, do the rando things, and then whenever something heavy or very specific needs to come in, the actual, like, you know, editor will step in and say, hey, just make sure that, you know, this happens and this happens for the next issue or whatever type of thing. So it's, but working with or without one, mm-hmm. I like it kind of in between. Because when you're on your own, there's definitely, like, where you just want to be able to do your story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's ones that, like, question, like, you know, can you draw this differently? Can you draw this differently? Can you, you know, do this? And I'm like, well, and sometimes it's like, you know, you do a stylistic choice of something, and they're like, well, this doesn't look as good here as you did it here, so can you please do it better here than here? And I'm like, well, that was a style choice for some reason or another, but, you know, some don't want that, so then you just got to do what they're asking you to do. So it's kind of a toss-up between, like, you know, the people that guide,
right,
and the people that, like, are trying to sort of, like, get in your business.
What do you think is, it sounds almost like the greatest skill set maybe a editor can have, though, is their ability to communicate.
Yeah.
Right? Is that really what you guys are looking for in them?
Yeah. And I think that, like,
communication and clarity.
Communication, yeah. Clarity, yeah, and kind of a willingness to collaborate. Because I don't, and I've never had this experience where it's been like a roadblock with an editor. I've always been lucky to work with really awesome editors, but like editors that are like, if you can kind of, if they trust you to take their information and with it, take it into consideration and see what can come out of that, you know, then that's really cool. And I think that's probably more prevalent with creator owned than with licensed. With licensed, it's like, if they say something, a fair amount of times, you probably have to do it. Like,
but they like, licensed property, like Sons of Anarchy,
right?
They have to be hands on. You feel like they have to, because it's they're responsible for the overall property.
They do. Like, I actually found with Sons of Anarchy that there was a lot of freedom.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's because I fit in so well with what my editors wanted to do with the work, and they fit in so well with what the licensors wanted to do with the work.
Okay.
So it could have been just this kind of perfect thing, but we never had any problems. It almost felt creator-owned at that point.
Really?
We just kind of kind of went into this battle, so to speak, fully loaded, you know, like,
yeah,
like there was not a lot of shifting of, like, puzzle pieces in that sense. But I think because ultimately, if you're working with an editor who kind of helps you with the story, which is a lot of editors I've worked with do, you know, they'll you got to submit outlines and breakdowns, and they'll go through that and tighten that up, and you'll do revisions, and then do the same with the script, and they'll, you know, be like, this scene kind of needs to change here, and this pacing, and this character, and da da da. It's important to remember that editors will also bring their own personal creativity to something.
Yeah.
You know, so like, you could get a totally different book. Like I'm working on Kennel Block Blues right now, which is out from Boomin next year, and that's really, really, really intensive. It's probably the most work I've ever done on a book, like, where just the amount of revisions that we're doing. But ultimately, I think it's really great, because I think we're all, like, every person involved is leveling up, you know, and that's because the editor is challenging us so much. But if it was another editor, it could be a totally different book, even though I'm still working on it, Daniel's still working on it and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
I've sort of worked on licensed stuff a little bit, but mine was more on the other side, where it's just like, you know, make sure this person looks like this. Make sure when you do this that they can't do this, and little things like that type of thing. So it really depends on what type of license does what, and some are more fickle or sticky about it. Some are like, you know, you can go off character, like you can go off model of how someone looks, as long as they have the very certain characteristics always following through all the time, sort of thing. So it's, you know, there's that. But in general, I would prefer an editor,
yeah,
in a general sense, where they're like making sure that you're keeping things concise and on, like, on point, you know, instead of meandering and, you know, questioning, like, why are you talking about this for 5 pages? Can you just, like, you know?
I'm just saying, what I've heard many times is, if you can't hit deadlines, you're not worth shit in the comic book industry.
Right.
And the editor's going to make sure you hit those deadlines, yeah, at least a good one, right?
Anything published.
Yeah,
doesn't matter, yeah, what you publish. If you can't make a deadline, you're going to have a tough ride.
When you're self-publishing, you're making your own deadlines, right? So is that more difficult then, or is that, what about it, Nick?
It's dangerous. Yeah. What's the schedule like on the webcomic that you do, Kate?
We're doing a page a week. Publishing that. There have been a couple issues in the last little bit that we've had to take a hiatus right now over the holidays.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And we're going to get our buffer back and everything like that.
Cool.
We had another writer involved in the project, and that's no longer the case. So we've had a lot of different structural changes coming through. So that has definitely altered how we're approaching the comic, what we need to be doing, and how much control we have and how much communication we have.
So do you guys feel that, you know, you're the artist, yeah, working with just one writer,
mm-hmm,
you're the writer working with just one artist, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
So how much do you guys have to be in sync without the editor? Is it that much more vital?
Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like the editor, because I'm the last guy that sees the thing before it gets posted.
Right.
There's a lot of times I make executive decisions. I'm just like, sorry, Justin, this is too wordy. I'll cut words out, and I just hope to God he's okay with it. But I got to fit it into the balloon. So, and that's the thing, is you kind of become your own editor when you're self-publishing stuff. But I think it's, like, right now I'm working on a big project. It's a graphic novel, and it's really intense. So I got my buddy Jason Memel to be my editor for that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, he wants to be an editor, but he's never really done it before, so he's looking for opportunities to try to do it. So I thought, this is perfect, because I need a fresh set of eyes, and he wants to get experience. And he is, like, he used that word challenging, like an editor who challenges you.
Yeah.
He's one of those dudes who's like, why is this happening? Is there a better way for this to happen?
Yeah.
And sometimes people are like, I don't know why he does it. It's just cool. And, then, and if that's your answer, it's like, shit, I got to rewrite it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
It's the anytime, I mean, it's only happened very rarely. Anytime I get a script back or when I'm working on an issue with an editor and there's no more than two drafts, or like, I've never been a one draft guy, but like anytime there's been a like approved it second draft, I'm like, it's not right. There's got to be more, right? Like, I'm not very good at articulating it, but that's where I get more worried and more like.
Well, luckily you're a writer, so working with words is not.
Yeah,
but they're kind of hitting on one thing. Chris and Nick touch on one thing. If you're a fledgling writer or fledgling artist, and I've experienced with this, timelines are one thing an editor can help you with. So I'm working with two guys.
Yeah.
I come from a print production background and marketing background, and I've had to learn to like work with creatives and roll stuff out on time. And sometimes I've been the creative. I've been the guy writing the copy and the guy booking the presses and booking the media campaign, and all that shit has to align. And if you can do that, which is what we tried to do with Futility, because I already knew how to do that. We were supposed to do 4 issues in a year. So we had 4 issues out, so we're in everyone's face nonstop for a year. I had a rough production schedule. I also timed out with when I'm going to write my novel to work on, a bunch of stuff. Timed it out with the comic convention, so we always had new product at every comic convention, all that kind of stuff. Well, I was the one guy that was used to doing that and could go look at the calendar and go, I've got to make that calendar date. But being the artistic types you're in, anything is like, fuck the rigidity of a calendar, right?
You know? Yeah.
And so we ran into this stuff. Our colorist, Nate, who's awesome, and to the point where we've readjusted things to keep him in the project, because you just can't find a colorist like that who's like throw in his lot with yours for nothing, right? But we had to adjust that timeline, and we banged out 3 issues, and the fourth one's a grind. He's also got a couple other titles he's working on, Where She Walks and stuff like that. But that meant going to a convention without any new product, right? We watched sales drop off, right? That all of a sudden puts me in the middle of trying to like letter a comic while I'm in the middle of a writing mentorship program at the University of British Columbia on my novel. If you can make timelines, if you're just doing a timeline for sake of a timeline, screw it, right? If it doesn't matter what it comes out. But if you work out a timeline and look at what you're going to do with your material and where it's going to go and who your audience is, all that kind of stuff, you can get more for your effort.
Yeah.
Right? You can get more recognition, which maybe some crazy guy is going to come and say, hey, I can't pay a lot, but you can work on my title. You know, like the opportunities come. If nothing else, people that put their money, like Image, or I don't know if Image is a good example, but people that put their money into comics, if they can see that you can make a timeline, right? You know, they want to see that you can actually do all this stuff. Like, you know, it's you can draw a great page. Can we actually get you to draw 22 of these by this date? You know, these are things we also want to know, right? So that's where getting an editor in who knows how to do that stuff can help you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Long story short, short story long.
Sorry. As a deadline approaches, you actually start questioning the nature of time itself. Like, yeah. What is time, man?
Yeah, that's
just perception.
Probably by 3 a.m.
And calendars invented by man.
Arbitrary.
That other group I was in, every single one of them was an artist. And
oh, really?
A couple of them were also writing, but everyone was an artist. There was no pure just writers. But I mean, I asked them, and they all said that you can be too much of a perfectionist. It's the wrong thing to be too much of a perfectionist as an artist.
Definitely.
Do you think you can be too much of a perfectionist as a writer too?
Yeah. Because I think it's a visual medium.
I think you hit a line where you make it as good as you can make it as a writer.
Right.
You know, when you've got that 15-word sentence down to 7 tight words saying the same thing.
Sure.
There's a certain line where you just can't compress it anymore, right?
You know? Yeah. And it's like you got to, at some point, you got to give the reins to the artist. It's a visual medium. Yeah. So it's I'm not going to do something that takes the soul out of the writer the artist,
yeah.
You know, unless that's the deal. I worked with artists where they're like, you just tell me what to draw and I'll draw it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's different with your collaborators. So I mean, that's part of the process.
Yeah. I've had writers take away stuff after I've drawn it because they're like, well, you already used your art to express what I was trying to say in words,
right?
So I might as well not even have this word balloon.
Yeah.
So
oh yeah, that's awesome. You know, shows better
than
tell
too, which I think is a level of maturity for me as a writer. Finally, go, you know what? I don't need all the shit I was going to clutter your art with.
You know? That was like the old Marvel method where they would be saying stuff as it was happening.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's good now that, you know,
totally.
Artists and writers, you know.
When I'm drafting, I make sure to communicate with Finn as much as possible for Crash and Burn.
Sure.
To make sure that, to see if they have any ideas that can communicate what I'm trying to get at with less speech bubbles, because I think giving the art more room to shine is one of the major challenges of comic media.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important if you're doing something that is self-published and you're working with the creator to make sure that everything comes to light the way that they are really passionate about it and they want to. Finn has a really, really strong vision for this work, so that helps me guide me in a lot of what I do and a lot of what I write.
Yeah.
So,
like, if I open up an issue of a book and I see like every panel's got like 2 or 3 caption boxes with like a paragraph in it, and it's just like an exposition dump, I'm like, this better be some Mark Twain shit. Because otherwise, this is just straight up overwritten.
Yeah. Right? But you know what? Comics, you know, in the 60s, 70s, they were overwritten.
I'll just flip the switch here.
Yeah.
but they're also underwritten because they weren't writing full scripts. You know?
But it's a weird thing, though, because nowadays when I read a book, you know, I can pick up Marvel Unlimited, you know, I go and read a book from the 70s and it'll take me 15 minutes and I'll read a book from now and it'll take me 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I almost wonder if we've gone too far the other way. Like, I sometimes, you know, nowadays, it used to be they would go in and explain to you exactly who that person is and what they're thinking and whatever, and it's too much. Mm-hmm. But now it's like they expect you to figure out, they say the guy's first name in, like, passing, and you go, oh, it was that guy from whenever, from 3 issues ago, or it's that character that I've seen for. And so it's almost like where is the, what's the right level?
I feel that way now. That's why I don't buy many floppies anymore.
Yeah.
Because if I've got an hour to read, I don't want to read 5 comics. So yeah. I'll wait till the trade comes out. I'll buy a couple, you know, to see, hey, you know, Black Science, buy the first 2 issues. All right, I'm good. I'm going to get the whole schmeal and sit down and really dare into this. You know, so I feel that way about that now. But I want to say one other thing. Sometimes, a lot less often, sometimes it can go the other way with a writer where, you know, Cam will go, oh man, that's a fucking hell to draw, and I don't know if I can actually convey that. You draw it, you're like, you know what? I'll figure out how to get it into conversation.
You got some weird shit going.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know what? I'll figure out how to get that through across the dialogue.
Oh my god, that, right?
Yeah. You know? So that happens once in a while. It's like, oh Jesus, do I really got to draw that? And it's like, you know,
Cam sounds like a whiny artist.
He's actually the most mellow laid back guy. Like, if he hated your guts and wanted you to die, it would take you 5 years of him buying you beers to figure that out.
He's one of those guys. I love Cam. He's a funny guy.
So, how much pushback can you get?
You know, well, he'll just do it as well. He's like, you know, I got a comic I want to do. I'm dying to do. It's got lots of airplanes and submarines and stuff in it. And he's like, no.
Horses driving cars. A crowd of horses driving cars.
At first we start with a big shot of New York, and then I zoom in and like panel by panel to the street. You know, but once in a while, you know, an artist can go, is there a way we can do this? And you're like, okay, I can write my way through that. If I backtrack four panels, I can get that across with a couple balloons and, you know, sort of thing, and we'll skip that, you know. Now, that's about 15% of the other way around of, hey, I can do this for you, so you don't have to clutter this with a bunch of words. But once in a while, it does go the other way.
I had one panel when I was working on Wolf Hands. The hard thing sometimes is like seeing the amount of dialogue that you've written and then seeing it on a page. It's like, oh wow, that's a lot of dialogue. And I did the lettering for Wolf Hands. I printing it, I put it in a computer, and then I printed it onto Blue Line, and then I traced over the computer lines with my hands so that it had that hand-drawn quality. And I remember I did one page where a guy was like leaning over and he was eating soup and looking up, and I was trying to give him this this impression of like just being really hungry and being like, huh? And the balloon, there was so much talking in the balloon that it ended up crowding the panel. And the after effect is it looks as if the character is ducking underneath the balloon. To make room. And that's only after the page is done. I was like, well, shit.
Why can't I stop talking?
I was actually going to ask Chris if he had had some experience like that where he got one that was just so many words and he went, what do I do with this?
I made the mistake sometimes of just not really drawing much of a background. Because I'm like, there's way too much like words going on here, so I'm just like not gonna draw much.
Yeah.
Because I'm not gonna spend an hour.
Right.
You know, it's just gonna get covered up. I'm gonna spend an hour inking it, only to have it just all covered up by word balloons.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, this is just gonna be like, you know, emptiness right here. Yeah. And then like but when the word balloons finally got put in there, I was like, oh, that looks really empty.
Yeah.
That's where lettering your own comic can come in. So I'll do a second draft of a script. And my scripts are about 15,000 words for like a 24-page comic. But I write the way I write, you know, you gotta remember this is like one of my oldest friends, right? We know we're like, I'll be like, remember that movie this and blah, 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 blah. And I'll write like for, you know, this much, half a page for like a panel, right? But then everything I can think of is in there. Cam, who knows me, knows I think will go through and go, got it. Or he'll go, you know what, I got a better way to do that. Or he goes, I don't know what to write. And then everything that I could think of is there, and he'll go with that. So, whereas if I was going to write with some guy that I didn't know, like, well, let's say, you know, Image connected us, right? You'd probably get the standard, you know, one page kind of thing where it's got the lines of dialogue and it's like five sentences on what the panel is, right? But I write the big stuff because I know I can go all out with some artists want that, right?
You know? You've known, like you said, you know Cam forever. How long have you known Justin for?
Mm-hmm. Very long, a few years.
A few years?
Yeah.
How about you and Finn, Kate? How long have you two known each other now?
8 months.
Yeah. 8 months. Do you find that it's getting easier to communicate with each other, or is it no difference? Is it, you know, how important can a relationship like that be that he's talking about, do you think?
We do encounter a little bit of friction sometimes.
Oh, juice?
Yeah.
Tell me about the friction. I want to hear about the drama. I'm just
kidding.
I need more pineapple.
Stop it. No, we do get friction because sometimes there are certain ideas that Finn has for art that I don't understand, and a lot of the times I'll just completely back off on it and try to work with it. So it is kind of continually reworked, the script and the panels. It happens at the same time. You know, before, when the other writer was involved, basically the script would come to me and Finn would say, I need you to cut like 5 pages out of this. I'm like, okay, you know, I can do that because I write really, really tight. So we're still learning how to work together, and learning how to interplay the writing with the artistry, but we do bring a lot of ideas to the table, and we do talk a lot. So it's not something where the script is done, and then it's pretty much finalized, and then it goes over in its entirety. You know, if there is storyboarding assistance that needs to be done, I will be there, and I will come up with all sorts of random ideas for what I think could happen, even though I can't draw it. It's kind of like stick people. There's like a circle and a triangle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm kind of learning the shorthand of how to
do
the layouts and the storyboard. But then once Finn gets started, it's just... Then it just goes.
And that's a... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to... Well, Chris, I mean, because you worked with Kurt Pierce here, who's in Calgary. You've also worked with people, you know, other parts of the world, right? Is that an advantage, working with somebody who's in the same city?
No. They're really...
is that because Kurt's Kurt, or...?
No, because it's all through... Most of them, it's just always through email anyways.
Yeah.
Me and Ryan worked on Ultranova.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you got it right!
Yeah, well done.
For you didn't recognize what comic you're talking about for a second. Yeah. We rounded it for him. For you know, a couple months.
Yeah.
And we really, for half of that period, I didn't even know we were in the same city.
I've worked on like I've known Valentin Ramon, who does Dave, the artist on Dave.
Yeah,
I've worked with him on that since 2012.
Yeah,
and we're working on another series right now. So that's like it'll be 4 years working with him. I've never talked to him.
Wow.
I've never heard his voice. I mean, I've heard it in my dreams, but I've never talked on the phone. And he's probably in Spain being like, he never picks up the phone and calls me. But like, I don't know what kind of accent.
Is that a Spanish accent?
I think so. I think so. It was a very bad Spanish accent.
He never picked up the phone.
But
please stop trying.
it's
somehow
I'm sick.
It's okay. go ahead. Yeah, it's okay.
Well, yeah, because I got rambling there and never finished the point. She kind of touched on it, though. You're talking about, like, you know, editing. So one of the things about lettering is I write these massive scripts. Most of it is a description of the panel, right? The dialogue's not that long. But nonetheless, I go through two drafts of dialogue. It still quite often is too much. When you letter your own comic, you got the art, and you go, all the shit that I thought I was going to have to say is there on the page, and you can scale it back, right? You know, and that's the final draft is when I letter it. So if you letter your own comic, you get that last shot at it, right? Where, oh, you know, I was like, I'm going to flip that switch there. He's drooling the guy, you know, flipping the switch. I'll just lose that line of dialogue right there, right? And so I always edit as I letter, right? The only thing is just to make sure you don't make some snap decision when you're delirious at 3 a.m.
Well, sometimes, that, you know, the art pretty much, it conveys what you want, or it can take out a lot of the things that you thought you had to put into the dialogue.
Yeah, you don't know until you see the art,
so if the art speaks to you, and you can remove some of the dialogue, or some of the exposition, oh God, don't put in exposition.
Yeah.
You know, why not?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, they're going by your best shot at trying to get your thoughts on paper, and sometimes it's like, I get that, right? And they lay it right out exactly like you picture it. Sometimes they do something that's not what you say, and you're like, well, that actually is even better, and I'm going to change my dialogue to actually fit this better. So, you know, quite often, I'll end up with less words in like, whatever we print is always less than what's in the script. You know, that's the one thing about lettering is you get to make that final call.
Are you worried if you were
call.
To work with an artist, though, that you're not familiar with, that isn't, you know, isn't Cam, that you'd have to change your writing style in order to, that they wouldn't get it, that they'd look at that and go, what the hell is this guy?
And I would do that. You know, the first thing I do when I talk to people, you know, because I float a couple ideas, friends, is like, have you written scripts? What kind of script do you like? You know, show me a script that you dig, right? You know, and some guys don't mind the big, long, rambling Neil Gaiman scripts. Some guys want, you know, the Tom DeFalco. Yeah. You know, here's four lines to sum up the page, and here's the dialogue, right?
Yeah.
It also depends on the artist you're working with. The more an artist has drawn, the more comics they've drawn, my observation is the less you got to tell them, right? You can say, this guy's doing this, and this guy's doing this, and they already know, here's how it's got to be set up to tell a story. Here's the angle, it's got to be either intuitive, right? You know, it's muscle memory to some degree, too. When you're working with new artists that draw really well, but haven't drawn a lot of stories in sequential art, sometimes I think it helps to spell it out a little more. And if they already get it, you'll figure, okay, I don't have to tell them all that shit all the time, right? But I've worked with guys that are like, okay, I really need to spell out
this is how the story's going, and this is how you've got to draw it to tell that story and all that kind of stuff, because they can draw well, you know. So these guys know how to tell a story, right? You know, yeah. They can actually write their own comics if they want, right? But then sometimes you start with people new. If you're a new writer, you're probably working with a new artist as well, right? You know, because yeah. somebody who's doing it for a living is really good. Is, you know, unless you can throw money at it, it's probably going to say, well, I'd love to help you, but
exactly.
dude, this is how I eat, you know. So you might have, you work with somebody who might be drawing great. They've been drawing since they were like, you know, 11 years old, but they haven't drawn a lot of comics, you know, a story in sequential format. You know, so sometimes you got to hold their hand a little bit and find out, you know. And sometimes you work with an artist is better than you think, and they're like, dude, I don't need all this shit. Like, you can cut these scripts in half, right?
Now, so, Chris, do you think you could, do you think you could write your own comic too? Or do you think maybe if you had that good editor, see, I brought it full circle, by the way.
Yeah. I could write my own comic.
Yeah.
I mean, I have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Yeah.
and a lot of it has to do with like, I guess my passion for it, or depending on, like, you know, timelines and deadlines and how concise I can be. But I do know that I could write something.
Yeah.
It won't really half the time it won't even be written for, like, if I'm doing it for myself,
mm-hmm.
it won't be written very much. Mm-hmm. I'll just thumbnail little things out and say, like, this is actually how I wrote one of my comics. It's just basically I draw the little page out and just say, like, this happens here, and or I just, like, draw a quick thing that someone says and making sure that I just hit points on every page.
Yeah.
And then I'll doodle a very certain, like, action that happens on those pages. And then I just use that as reference.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go back and then I look back at it and go, like, okay, no, I gotta change how they said this here or whatever, blah blah blah, type of thing. I know I can do it. I just haven't, because
it's one more thing to do to get
artists,
something done.
You can learn to write. I don't know that I'm a writer. Can they learn to draw?
I mean, always learn.
Can they learn at that level, though?
A lot of writers drew comics as kids. Like, I drew
sure.
piles of comics as kids, too,
right? You do some lettering, but how good are you at drawing there, Ryan?
Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it has to do with just what you're wanting to do. Like, I mean, I don't say that you don't want to do it, but what I'm saying is like, you know, we all have this sort of, like, people say talent.
You're all storytellers.
But at the same time, it's more along the lines of, like, where you focus that,
right,
your drive on.
Yeah. I totally believe that. You know, you see famous, you see movie actors and, like, oh, he put out a record, you know, what a loser, whatever. But most people I know that do one thing, play music or draw whatever, they have in life, they've dabbled in some other things. They've been in a band, or they drew a little. Like, I did nothing but draw as a kid. I did nothing but draw. I wanted to draw comics for a living, and I just kind of let it go around the 11th grade, and there's no getting it back, right? And I also discovered that I enjoyed writing more, right? But
yeah,
most guys, if you're a creator, you have different avenues, and at some point, a lot of guys I know, they just kind of pick the thing that's the thing they like doing the most, right? You know, Cam, my artist, he's got a degree in English literature. He's a good writer. Yes, he's got a new English literature. He'd rather play bass and write songs and draw, right? He can write really well, better than me, you know? Probably write tighter because I've just been doing it longer, but he could do that, right? But he's picked the thing that he wants to do because there's only so many hours in a day, right? So you could probably write all your own comics, but would you be drawing as much?
Is the theme of this entire discussion that Cam is awesome?
No. I haven't got many examples. He's going, well, when I was working with this guy, when I was working with this guy for Boom, you know,
I got this
comic. So for real life examples, you know.
All right. Well, guys, we got to wrap this part up. It's and then I guess it's going to be Keith with you guys next.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, time's come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for